I heard a story recently of a man who really loved dogs, really got into learning about them, reading about them, and he even ended up teaching classes to other dog owners on how to train and to manage their pets. This same man one day was doing some household chores and decided he was going to pour himself a new sidewalk in front of his house leading up to his door. So he poured the cement and smoothed it out and looked at his finished product, this nice brand new sidewalk. Just then a large dog appeared and walked through the fresh cement, leaving a paw print behind. The man muttered a little, figuring, well, it's a dog, it doesn't know any better. And he smoothed out the damage. He then went inside to get some twine, thinking that I better put up a fence around this so nobody else gets into it. But when he got back inside, he discovered that the dog had once again left a paw print in the fresh cement. So he smoothed out the cement, a little disgusted, and put up his little twine fence around the cement. He then went into the house, and 5 minutes later, he looked outside and saw, guess what? Fresh paw prints. He was really mad now. So he got out his trowel and smoothed out the cement one more time, went back to the porch, turned around, and lo and behold, the dog was sitting in the middle of his brand new sidewalk. So the man went inside, grabbed his gun, and shot the dog dead. Now his neighbor had been watching this whole event unfold, and he ran over to the man and he said, "Why did you do that? I thought you loved dogs." The man thought for a minute and said, "I do. I do love dogs. But that's in the abstract. I hate dogs in the concrete." Forgiveness isn't that hard when it is in the abstract. But it is very hard when it becomes concrete to us, when it becomes very personal, when it becomes something that we feel. I was once preaching a sermon in the D.C. area in Maryland, and I was talking about forgiveness and even the forgiveness that we as Christians are called to give those who perpetrated the attacks of 9/11. And a man approached me after Mass. He was Irish or Scottish. You could tell by his accent, short, white hair. And he came up to me after Mass and said that that was the most offensive thing that he had ever heard. And I told him, "I'm sorry, but that's what it means to be a Christian." He said, "Then I don't want to be a Christian," and walked out of the church. For him, forgiveness was not something abstract towards these perpetrators of 9/11, but something that had become deeply personal, deeply felt, and very concrete. Last week, I asked you to think of a time when somebody had hurt you that was very personal, that you felt deeply and was very concrete. Perhaps even a time that you might think you might not be able to forgive that person. And I asked you to consider, as you thought about that person or that situation, I asked you to think about the limits of God's forgiveness. Do we forgive somebody who cusses at us, but not somebody who berates us in front of others? Do we forgive a spouse who's cheated once, but doesn't seem to want to quit? How many times should a woman forgive her husband for beating her? And how many times should God forgive you when you lie and steal and cheat and misuse your gift of human sexuality? In the gospel today, Jesus answers that very question. What is the depth of God's forgiveness? It has a lot to do with debt. If you consider the word debt, most of us probably think of financial debt. For example, in our country, the average 21-year-old has 5 credit cards and owes $3,000. 23% of 21-year-olds owe $3,000 to $7,000, and 10% of 21-year-olds owe $7,000 or more. There are 4 credit cards in circulation for every man, woman, and child in the United States. And the average debt of an American, excluding your mortgage, is $19,000. Half of that's on credit cards. And 40% of Americans spend more than they can make each year. Debt has become something that we are very overcome by in this country, and I know many of you are overcome by. But it is nothing compared to something that we are often unaware of or choose to ignore, and that is the spiritual debt. God made each of you to honor Him through obedience. To honor Him through your obedience. And each time we fail in that obligation to be obedient to Him, whether it's by a word or an action or a thought, whether it's by a sin of commission or omission, we incur a spiritual debt. A debt that can't be paid. Why? Because we've offended an infinite God, therefore an infinite debt has been incurred. This is why Jesus in Matthew 6:12 prays to God to forgive our debts to Him. This first man in the parable today that Jesus talks about, some scholars say that he owed billions with a B, of dollars to his master. And indeed, the gospel says that there's no way he can pay it back. Normally, his family would, while he's in jail, try to get enough money together to get him out of jail and get him out of his debt. But this gentleman is stuck. And his wife and his children and his property are going to be sold. Can you imagine being this man, that you are going to lose everything, including your own life, because you will now be a slave. Brothers and sisters, that is exactly what happens when we sin. We lose our life to slavery, and we're unable to pay back the debt. We'll never be able to pay back the debt, and you need somebody to forgive your debt. But Jesus tells us that the forgiveness of that debt is totally dependent on your forgiveness of debt. This second man in the parable today is the servant of the first. He owes 600,000 times less than the first guy. Yet, how does the first guy treat him? He comes up and he chokes him and he says, "Give me my money." The guy begs and he says, "Forget it," and puts him in jail. Jesus is clearly drawing an analogy for you. God is the master. You are the first servant. And those around you, those who you need to forgive, are like the second servant. The meaning? If you don't forgive, God's not going to forgive you. Bottom line. What does our first readings today say? Forgive your neighbor's injustice, then when you pray, your own sins will be forgiven. Could anyone nourish anger against another and expect healing from God? You see, you got to let go of your own anger and your own resentment and your own hurt feelings before God can give it to you. It's a precondition. What do we pray in the Our Father every time at Mass? Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Or another translation, which some of you who are older might remember, forgive us our debt as we forgive our debtors, those who owe us. And I don't know about you, but when I pray those words, it scares me. Because I'm asking God to forgive me, but only to the extent that I'm willing to forgive others. And when I consider how I forgive others, I think about the grudge that I hold towards my brother-in-law. I think about the parishioner who keeps leaving Mass early. And it hurts. And I think about that anger and that resentment that I hold inside. And that's how God's going to forgive me. Forgiveness is not always easy. During World War II, there was a Nazi doctor named Dr. Mengele. His nickname was the Angel of Death. He was stationed at Auschwitz in Poland. And during his stay, a pair of 9-year-old twin girls were sent to him for some of what were called experiments. Now, Mengele's experiments included attempts to change eye color by directly injecting chemicals into children's eyeballs, by amputating limbs and other so-called surgeries. He was known, especially with girls, for performing sterilizations and shock treatments. Most of his victims died. A few lived. One survivor accounts for one of the times when Mengele took 14 pairs of Roman twins into his facilities, placed them on marble dissection tables, injected their hearts with chloroform to kill them, and then dissected the twins to compare their various body parts. Eva and Miriam Kaur survived the treatment of this man. And in 1995, on the 50th anniversary of their freedom from Auschwitz, Eva read out loud what she called an official declaration of amnesty, in which she forgave Dr. Mengele. She said that to be liberated from the Nazis was not enough, that she needed to be released from her pain. To extend forgiveness without any prerequisites required of her perpetrators was an act of self-healing, she said. Many Jews were outraged at what she said, feeling that they did not owe forgiveness to the Nazis or Dr. Mengele. But through this act of forgiving her worst enemy, Eva said she experienced the feeling of complete freedom from pain. Brothers and sisters, Jesus wants the same for you. The freedom from pain. The freedom from vengeance. The freedom from anger. The freedom from resentment. And you don't have it on your own. Only Jesus can give it to you, because he is the one that has purchased you at such a great price. He's the one who has paid your debt. Number one, will you accept what he has given for you, this payment of your debt? And number two, will you be generous enough to extend that same mercy and forgiveness to others?